if your blood sugar is abnormally high, unquenchable thirst. You could have a mouthful of water and desire a mouthful of water. So you just keep drinking. Exactly. And then after that, you've got the other side of the drinking of too much water, and that would be a lot of urination that follows. Yep. And so I wake up anywhere between 2 and 23 times an evening to take care of that. Continue.
Yep. Fatigue. Yep. Hunger can actually be a sign of hyperglycemia as well.
Really?
Which only exacerbates it and makes the whole situation worse. So when people have high blood sugars, the first thing I always tell them is go for foods that are very low in carbohydrate that aren't going to convert into sugar. And take your medication. We need to work on getting that blood sugar down to abate those symptoms.
You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW-Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
I'm Dwayne Olson, your host today for Education Matters on WGTD-HD. Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin, at 91.1 on your FM dial, and 101.7 in Elkhorn, and 103.3 in Lake Geneva. WGTD is a member of the Wisconsin Public Radio Network. Our program today focuses on the responsibilities and activities of Ms. Terry Tessman, whose title is Supervisor of Personalized Learning and STEAM for the Racine Unified School District. She is part of a team led by Chief of Secondary Transformation, Dan Thielen, in developing the Academies of Racine in the Racine High Schools. This project is to start this coming school year. Welcome, Terry, to Education Matters.
Thank you, Dwayne.
I have had Terry on as my guest about a year ago, and so this is a continuation kind of that discussion. Terry Tessman has a most unique background coming to Racine Unified from the business world as well as the academic world. You revised the science curriculum at the Prairie School here in Racine, as well as being involved in the science curriculum in several school districts. Tell our listeners briefly about your experience in developing science curricula so they can have a sense for your background.
A lot of the work that I do has evolved around a program called Project Lead the Way, which is a national program that has curriculum that is based on project-based learning. And they have three different pathways. One is in engineering, one is in biomedical science, and the other is in computer science. And these have been very effective models for the student engagement and student interest and excitement in areas that are high-need areas career-wise. So a lot of the districts that I've gone to have asked me to come there and implement these programs, and they've been extremely successful. They start out with a couple classes, and next thing you know, they're exploding. The Middleton model is one of them that was implemented through this model. The Verona High Schools, Greendale High Schools. I did some of that work at Franklin, and now I'm at Racine, and we actually have implemented some additional programs there in that pathway. But a lot of it's based on my background as a biomedical engineer when I was in business, and then, you know, just my interest in hands-on learning and experiences for kids.
I think that's incredible that you're a biomedical engineer, you know, and then now that you're working with Racine Unified to promote the kinds of programs that we're talking about here today. I think that's absolutely incredible.
Well, thank you. You know, what I have found with that is those programs make such an impact on kids. And it's kids that learn in the non-traditional manners. And when kids are exposed to this and they start driving their own learning, next thing you know, they become more confident and they start owning their education. And pretty soon they also have a lot of explorations about stuff they like and stuff they don't. They see different careers and they see options for themselves that they didn't know exist before they take these kind of classes. And a lot of it has to do with breeding confidence, but also finding out things that they're good at.
Okay, and so this is what the educators call active learning today, right?
Yes, and experiential learning. They're actually learning things in the contents of what is out there in the real world. And, you know, when you learn problem-solving skills, Duane, you could use that for anything. So if you learn that in the classroom, how to attack a problem, I mean, you might have a flat tire on the interstate.
Yes.
You still have to figure out, okay, what's the best steps? What do I need to do first? And that's actually the problem-solving skills that often they just have a chance to practice them in the classroom that they translate into their everyday lives.
And so many of the kids today really dislike passive kinds of learning, and this is really quite the opposite of passive learning, and they can see the immediate impact then of what they're learning.
That's exactly right, and they gain the confidence. You know, one of the things is when you and I were growing up, 70% of our learning was from an oral and auditory standpoint. Our students today, 70% of them are visual learners, so, you know, they need to see that and do those things just because they've grown up in a different world than some of us old-timers have.
Yes.
But, you know, when we give them chances for them to do the exploration and just facilitate their learning rather than direct it, they're the directors of their learning, and it just the confidence that those kids get, it's just mind-boggling. But that's why I've stayed in education.
So it's up to the educational institutions, the schools, then, to provide experiences for these kids that they can learn from and build on.
Exactly.
And self-educate, then, ultimately.
They tend to do that. You know, I've had students who say, do I really have to go to my next class? I want to stay here. But a lot of times, they just go home and they tinker. One of the teachers at Red Apple was doing something with the kids that involved coding, and the student went home and came back and had written her a note in binary. And this was, you know, a fourth grader. So he wrote her this whole note using binary code. So he took what he learned in the classroom, was so excited, went home and did that. I've had one parent stop and say, what did you do to my son? And it's like, well, I'm really sorry. And this was an assistant superintendent at Middleton. And he says, no, it's a good thing. He comes home and he never would talk before. And now I can't get him shut up. All he talks about is, you know, his engineering design class. And it's like, it's the power of project-based learning. And it's actually the kids that become the driving force behind their learning. And they take that excitement outside the classroom and into their lives, which is pretty fun.
Okay, and so this is the background then of what Racine Unified is headed toward in next year with its academies.
That's exactly right.
And I certainly find that exciting as well. And you said that 70% of the learners today are visual learners?
That was some of the past research, previous research is, yeah, that they learned visually. And that was quite different than we used to do, you know, a lot of the term in education right now is the spit and get method. So, yes.
Yeah, the sit and get method.
Yeah.
And so then schools then have to change in order to respond to the learners. And so this is a step in that particular direction. Okay, define STEAM for our listeners, because I'm sure that some of them don't know what STEAM is.
STEAM is an acronym for science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And it's one of those areas that tend to be not well-defined in a lot of the curriculums of the kids. In elementary school, a lot of the real emphasis is on English and math, so there is some math, but a lot of kids like to do the technology and the tinkering, and you know, play outside of class often has to do with those areas. But the thing is that those are areas where a lot of the future careers are embedded.
Yes.
You know, if you look at the top 20 careers that are have been researched, the top 20 careers in the next 5 years are in science, technology, computer science, and the biomedical. So STEAM and STEM is a big initiative to push to get more people that are underrepresented in those populations,
right,
and females more involved in those areas. So that's what the initiative is. The art component is the difference between STEM and STEAM, and art is extremely important because when you start doing things in art, you start problem solving, you start creating, but you also are doing the 3D modeling, so you're doing the spatial thinking that helps out in those other areas. But it's really engaging to see people because a lot of people are talented. Everybody's talented in a different way.
Yes.
And the learning that occur when you put some of those activities together. I did something up in Middleton with a phenomenal art teacher where the engineering kids in from the engineering class met with the kids in the art class, and they co-worked together on a project where they designed something so the art people were able to show the talents behind texture and color and all that, and then the engineering students actually drew it on a computer and they made a stereolithography through it in sand, and we poured aluminum casting, and they created their shape. So the engineering students got to see life through 3D modeling and how you apply that into a model, and the art students got to see how they could transform what they create onto a 3D screen. So it really enhances learning again, and everybody wins.
Okay, and right, and it integrates learning too, which is so important because so much of it has been in silos and separate boxes and that sort of thing. You and I are the product probably of that.
Yeah, and that's a great analogy. But you know, I think a lot of the stuff that I have, it's the encouragement I came from a really strong music background at Starbucks School with an educator named James Blankey. I think your listeners and you could probably attest to somewhere along the line there was one teacher that encouraged you or said something to you that allowed you to just say, you know what, I can do this, or really just gave you this thing that said, you know, you're important. And that was Mr. Blankey for me. But the music part of it helped me then when I became an engineer, because you learn a creativity and you learn a different way of approaching things. That's why the arts are so important. And it's actually going to be a big part of what we're doing moving forward at Unified as well.
So this is a logical marriage then, adding
yes.
arts then to the STEM, science, technology, and
engineering and math.
And engineering and math. Okay,
yes,
there you go. Thank you ever so much.
Yes.
Let's move on. And one of the most recent announcements then related to the academies of Racine for next year is securing this Ford Next Generation Learning Grant. Tell us about this, and then we'll talk about then how that has affected the development of the curriculum for next year.
Okay, the Ford Next Generation Learning, that event was actually a designation event. And what that is that Ford Next Generation Learning, their educational foundation, is extremely involved in actually providing educational opportunities. And it used to have to do a lot in professional development. But they started this academy model, and the big lead in this is actually the Nashville. So the academies of Nashville have been, they're kind of like the stellar group involved in that. But so it started in the academies of Nashville, and the Ford Next Generation Learning now, it has taken off and grown into other schools, or school districts are adopting this model. And it involves three basic strands. So we had to go through an extensive process to apply for a Next Generation Learning designation, and we did extensive visits and research and other actions, activities that we could talk about. But the culminating event was this past Monday, where the people from Shell Carrier, who is the head of the Ford Next Generation Learning, came in and designated Racine as a community, which was a huge, huge kudos for us. We are one of 21 right now, but it's ever-expanding. They have Rockford's a Ford Next Generation Learning community, and there's two or three others that are coming on board just in the Midwest alone, but they are scattered throughout the United States. There's a heavy emphasis in Florida. Cleveland is a Ford Next Generation Learning community, and there's some on the East Coast as well. But basically, Ford Next Generation Learning has found that there's three basic strands that really allow students to learn a lot and become owners of their own their own learning. And there's actually three strands. And the first one is strand one is one of the three areas that we looked at. But strand one is transforming teaching and learning itself. And that has to do with the project-based learning and career exploration and those kind of things. Strand two has to do with transforming the secondary school experience. And what a lot of the research has indicated is students need to be grouped into small learning communities where uh-huh. they are kind of in a cohort where they travel together, they have the same teachers, and the teachers support the students in a way that they know the teachers. The teachers know the students, they know how they work best, how they learn best. The students explore their own way, how they learn best and how they do things. But that's kind of the structure of the day. You know, how does the day evolve where you take that different kind of instruction and transform it into what the students are have a supportive structure in the secondary school setting? The third part, which is a really key, is transforming business and civic engagement. So involving the businesses and the community itself into the education of the students so that the students are getting some experiential learning out in the community. And the students have been involved in some of that this year. We just finished See Your Future Expo, which was highly, highly supported.
Say that again?
The See Your Future Expo.
Okay.
So all the ninth graders at Racine Unified went down to the festival hall, and there were businesses and, you know, the trades and Wheaton Franciscan and, you know, Badger Meter. So RAMAC was highly involved in that, Higher Expectations. And when there was this huge See Your Future career exploration. So the kids went in not to see the business, but to see what kind of things they might do as part of their future. So they had, you know, people from Educators Credit Union talking to them. You know, what do you do? You know, the computer technology people, they even had people drywalling. So the trades were there. It was a pretty phenomenal event. But that gives the kids a chance to see, and that's just business and civic engagement. It also includes post-secondary experiences. So, you know, next year the ninth graders will be able to go to a post-secondary place to start experiencing that. But it's kind of to see what they can do and kind of explore and find out what they might want to do. And that's a lot of what the academies do. So basically, for Next Generation Learning uses these three pillars or these three strands to really support the learning structure for what has become the academy system. So the Academies of Nashville, there's an Academies of Rockford, and now we are honored to be one of the four Next Generation Learning communities, and we are the Academies of Racine.
So one of the early things that you did was go to Nashville then, and just to see how this was working in effect then. And then you've been building from there.
That's correct. There was 40-plus people that went down to Nashville last March.
Yes.
And that included people from businesses in Racine. It included people from the school board. It included teachers. It included educators. It included counselors. It included the administration, the people from Higher Expectations, you know, Jim Ladwig from RAMAC. There was a lot of people that went down there and saw this in action. And then we had to go through a series of events where one of the biggest things is we had to explore where the careers of the future were in this community. And that's a huge part of
in this community.
In our community.
Uh-huh.
So it's not like we're going to say we're going to offer this pathway, but there's no jobs for a future for the kids. So we had to do an extensive data analysis. And Kyle Clark, who worked at Higher Expectations, did a lot of that work through them and workforce development. So we've had a really strong community support from the area businesses. But a lot of the Higher Expectations is our community engagement organization, and they have been phenomenal in getting that. So we used that data. Ford came in and just did an exploration event to see if we even had any, you know, we had the background to be able to be considered. And they said, go ahead. And then we had a visioning event, and then we had to have some a series of events where they would come in, and we had a mentor, Star Herman from Nashville, who was phenomenal. But we established a series of events that helped us lead to the point where we were actually able to come up with a master plan, which is a 70-plus page document that's guiding our work over the next 3 years. And, you know, they evaluated everything. It was a long, long process. It was an in-depth process. There's a lot of professional development. We have 10 different tactics that we are addressing to make sure that we are have a lot of fidelity in this work. And they include business and civic engagement, post-secondary structure, you know, the structure of the day, a freshman academy model, putting together the academy structures, communication. So there's all these tactics that we are involved in, and it's kind of like a expansive Gantt chart, but it's over a 70-page document, and that's what they evaluated us all that allowed us to get this designation, which is going to allow us to have be able to support these small learning communities for the benefits of our students.
So you had a model that you were following. You had to put together a plan and take several steps through that plan. They monitored you as you moved through those steps then, and then the ultimate outcome then is getting this grant, this Next Generation.
Well, it's not a grant. It's a designation which allows us to be a four Next Generation Learning community. And it is quite the kudos because every community is a little bit different. So we can't be an exact model of Nashville, and we can't be an exact model of the other ones. We are going to be a model of what works in Racine.
Yes.
You know, we have...
fits Racine's...
The community, it fits our students, and that's always got to be the driving force, as you know, Duane, is it's what's best for our kids, what's best for our students, what's going to give them the most you know, confidence and the most exposure to make sure that what they're doing is really what, you know, they want to do with their future. So our whole goal is based on the North Star. You know, we want to be able to give our kids the tools so that they're career and college ready when they leave Racine Unified.
Right. Okay. That sounds great. So talk about then how this will fit into the three large high schools then for next year.
And the three large high schools are the designated going to be the academies of Racine. And so for next year, we are doing this as an incremental approach. We are putting in a structure today that allows the teachers to work together and get together once in a week to start setting up for the following school year for the academies themselves. The academies are based on pathways, which is based on a lot of the data and a lot of the student interest. So this is a lot of this is student. What do the students want to learn? And is there a way we could expose them to those interests in the community? So next year, the structure of the day will allow those teachers to work with each other and communicate with each other to set up the programs for the following year, but also to have, you know, to be able to talk to the businesses. How do you see this impacting our kids? So that's what's going to happen next year. In preparation for that, we, in October, all the high school educators went to the businesses themselves and found out some of the things that are going on there.
This past October.
And they came back and they said, you know, there's some stuff I saw today that I could implement in my classroom on Monday. You know, they realized that problem-solving skills are key, soft skills are key. But also they were able to make connections where they might be able to get their kids into some internships. And there was over 20 businesses and community spots where they went, including the fire department, including Ridgewood. You know, so there's a lot of different opportunities that people are going to get. So kind of getting back to the original three high school thing. So that's what's going to go on at the three high schools. The incoming freshman class will be part of a freshman academy where that's going to be the base year of learning with academy. So next year we're going to have the freshman academy.
Okay.
And then we're going to have what we're calling career prep centers, which is that year of preparations. The student or the teachers will work together to develop the pathways, which will become the academies the following year.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Okay, it makes sense, and I'm most interested then in seeing how this develops then.
Yeah.
That seems very challenging to me.
Well, it's been a lot of work. There's a lot of structures and places. Each of the academies, so right now there's like at Park, there's the orange, blue, and white school. They'll become an academy school. But then we also have a separate freshman academy where the freshmen will be. And they will travel in a cohort similar to the cohorts that they have in place now. So, but they will have also something that's called a freshman seminar where they'll explore themselves. You know, how do I learn best? They're going to look at academic career plans, which they started in middle school, to find out, you know, do some self-explorations. They'll have another See Your Future Expo. They'll go out into some of the post-secondary things. They'll learn soft skills. They'll learn different activities that help them be successful.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of it's more a self-exploration about finding out, you know, do they learn best using their hands?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of activities do they like to do? You know, do I like to do things where I'm moving? Do I like to do things where I'm developing?
So they're learning about themselves and their own interests and skills and
right.
Whatever.
So they're starting to become ready to, you know, explore what they want to do over the next 4 years.
Okay. Anything else that you want to add then about what? I read in the materials that are available on Racine Unified's website, and you can go to rusd.org.
Yes.
And find that, and then I'll tell you later in the program then where we can go in terms of that. We then you've told us then about where the ideas have come from these academies. One of the ideas that was expressed in the materials was middle school transformation. Tell us a little bit about that, or have you talked about that already?
Yes, we've met with the middle school staff, including all their leadership. Well, there's some phenomenal educators in the middle schools, and there's also, you know, the leadership at the schools. So we've met with them and started saying, what does a somebody leaving eighth grader need to have to be prepared to enter ninth grade.
Ah.
So part of it is, and also from the ninth grade, you know, what are the, some of the skills? So we have some consistency. We have some mobility in Racine where kids are traveling from school district, from, you know, middle school to middle school or high school to high school. What are the skills that we need at all the levels? You know, so we're looking at what we're currently doing in middle school to make sure that we're doing what's best for our students again.
And making sure they have the skills that they need as they move on then into high school.
Right. And a lot of that centers around, again, in middle school now, the DPI has something they called an ACP or an academic career plan. You know, how do we implement that so the kids are starting to do this career exploration? You know, do we want to go into more project-based learning in the middle school? What are we visioning? You know, how are we going to assess the students? You know, all those different things. There's a lot of activities that are involved in that. And we are continuing on with the middle school transformation throughout this year and next school year.
Okay, and I also know that you are working with the post-high school institutions like Gateway Technical College, where
yes.
we're broadcasting from,
mm-hmm.
or University of Wisconsin-Parkside, to make sure then the students are prepared for the programs that they have there or that they have programs that fit the students?
That's part of it. And when we went down to Nashville last March, there were people from the post-secondary there that went with us as well. So there are people from Gateway and from Parkside. We went again this past September, and Dr. Albrecht from Gateway went down, and again, some more people from Parkside. So there was another group that went down this past September. But the idea is, one of the bases is that we want kids also not to learn with leave high school with an idea of what they want to do, but also to have a chance to work with some of our strong post-secondary schools now. So one of the big things is we want the kids to leave Racine Unified with certifications. We want them to leave with dual credit because you can get transcripted credit.
Ah, okay.
You know, some of the Project Lead the Way classes, the kids could get transcripted credit. They could leave school with 28 different college credits before they leave school.
Really?
And there's a lot of those programs in place right now. One of the big showcases has been the Park Automotive Program. A lot of those kids are leaving with the certifications. But also as part of the career pathways then, is what if we could also, if they need to have an automotive math, part of what the teachers will be working on next year is how do we make the other curricular areas more appropriate for what the students' experiences are. So, you know, maybe after they get the baseline of what they need from a math standpoint, maybe we can enhance some of the learning by teaching an auto math. And, you know, is it possible for them to get that certification or get that credit from Gateway in high school, so by the time they leave, they have more certifications and more transcripted credit. So that's a lot of the work that we're doing is we're working with the post-secondary for that.
And so some of it might involve using, like, Gateway's facilities then, too?
That's correct.
Not only their staff, but their facilities.
Yeah, and they've been very, very generous, as has Parkside. You know, we've met last year, Dan Thielen and Dr. Gallion and I met with the deans and Dr. Thompson, who's an executive director of curriculum instruction, met with the deans down there to look at our curriculum and align it with their curriculum. Where can we get the kids to get college credit? You know, what are we teaching
yes.
now that aligns with what they're doing? But the other idea, too, is we're having their educators. We had a summit last August as part of the visioning where their educators met with our educators, all of our department chairs, to look at how do we, again, make that transition smooth, but also get some of those kids on college campuses early, but also our teachers, to do some experiential learning for our teachers with their teachers so that they're starting to see some of the connections, too, where they might have. You know, I have a student that might really like that, you know, and then have
yes.
that connection. So it's a very much a community event, and that includes the post-secondary.
Okay. And another thought that comes to me is the idea of distance learning. Would there be any distance learning involved in this? That's so popular these days, at least for some courses.
Well, and that's true. And some districts are, you know, almost requiring the students to take one blended learning class just to be ready to position themselves for going to a post-secondary standpoint, because a lot of classes are being taught that way. That's an option through currently through what we have. We got a grant that Jane Finkenbein from Gateway had approached us about and approached Dr. Gallion, where the kids are actually getting credits for part of the IT pathways, and part of that is using the Vanguard system, which is distant learning. James O'Hagan has come into Unified over the past year, and he's really enhancing some of the blended learning or the distant learning, online learning options. But that those programs have existed in Racine Unified over the past few years,
right.
And they will continue. And the students certainly do have that options. And part of Youth Options also gives them that opportunities to take online classes for areas that we might not offer at Unified, including some of the advanced AP courses.
And then, so much of this sounds like it's going to be more individualized, more personalized then for the learners, because they have so many potential options to offer them.
Right, and it's all based on what they want to learn and what they see their future as. You know,
yeah.
where do they want to go with that?
Okay. At this point, then, I want to remind our listeners that this is your host, Dwayne Olson, and you are listening to Education Matters on WGTD HD at 91.1 on your radio dial from Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Today, I'm visiting with Ms. Terry Tessman, Supervisor of Personalized Learning and STEAM for the Racine Unified School District. We have been discussing the personalized learning and STEAM programs, science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics in Racine Unified, and then the future as far as those programs are concerned. Now back to our program. Recently, I read an article about in the Des Moines Register where they had what sounded like a career academy focusing on preparing teachers. Is that possible in the future? And what other career foci might be possible as we move forward? Or maybe whatever is available in the community or near the community or what?
There's the student voice is going to drive a lot of that. But to answer your question about the educator pathways, that is going to be one of the pathways.
Ah.
Right now, the initial pathways that we focused on were the ones that were driven by the data and where the kids are signing up for a lot of the courses now. But we also realize there's an educator shortage right now. It's very difficult to find tech ed teachers. It's very difficult to find teachers in other specific areas. So one of the things is there's a real strong presence in Racine with the PDK community, and one of the things is working with some of the school the post-secondary schools around this area is to allow the students to do some exploration in the educational arenas. Some of the other foci is going to be around some of the strong programs that the kids love now, and that includes the arts and the theater and the music programs. We have some very vibrant music and theater programs in our high schools and middle schools, and it's such a strong part of communities and careers, but also for, enrichment and other things. That those are some of the pathways we're also going to have.
Okay, and then one more thing that I want to ask about, too, is, and it's indicated in the material that Racine Unified has on their website, is the International Baccalaureate Program will be continued at Case High School, Advanced Placement at Horlicken Park, and so forth. Comment on those, and will those classes then be block scheduled as well?
Yes, they will, but they're not going to be a part of an individual academy at this point in time because there's so many students that want to take that might have a focus or an interest in one of the other areas. They will be called what's a global class where the students can't get involved. So the IB program is at Case, and then there's also the middle school one at McKinley, and then they have some in the elementary schools. The AP classes are going to be are at all three of the high schools, so they're currently at Park, Case, and Horlick, and they're going to continue. The IB program at Case is going to expand into something called the career prep or career the IBCP. So the kids that want to go into some of the career areas like engineering can be part of the International Baccalaureate in those areas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Case is involved in that. They were allowed to start that program this year. Patty Hammes has been a huge push behind all that. And that is going to continue. But again, it gives the kids chance to explore things. The IB program is pretty phenomenal. And the AP, that obviously gives the kids some chances to take their learning to the next level, and that's going to be encouraged.
Okay, so these options continue to be available and even expanded then as
right.
we move
and
into the future.
That a lot of that's going to come from student voice and choice. You know, this is as they learn more and more about themselves, they're going to want to get into opportunities that allow them to continue and to explore that, and we're going to provide that for them.
Okay. One of the things that you and I talked about before we came on the air then was the idea of maker spaces, and you're really very excited about this concept of maker spaces. Tell our listeners what maker spaces are, and then the ideas that you have in terms of that. So,
maker spaces are they're kind of phenomenal because they're kind of places where you could be creative and put your talents to work all at the same time. So they're kind of an exploration. I got involved in makerspaces just because I've always liked to, you know, it used to be a derogatory term to be called a geek, but I'm a geek, you know, so I'll go into the Apple store and I have to stay away because I try all their gadgets. But what the makerspaces are is that they are a place where the community or students or anybody could go in and do some creative experiences. And there's basically three kinds of makerspaces. They're kind of grouped that way. A lot of them start in libraries. So, you know, Racine Public Library has a makerspace. And throughout the country, and it's actually internationally, there's makerspaces. And then there's also a community makerspace, and there's some phenomenal ones. Sector 67 in Madison. There's one in South Milwaukee. There's some phenomenal ones in Chicago. But a lot of them is starting out of kind of, you might have heard of Google, Duane,
yes.
Where they have this back room where their employees can go back and create and do things. And that's basically a makerspace within a business. So there's library makerspace, community makerspaces, but what's happening is that they're also finding a place in the schools. So, you know, a lot of it is coming out of the 3D printing. 3D printing used to cost $20,000 for a 3D printer.
Yes.
Now you could get one for $400. You could walk into Barnes & Noble and buy one, you know, on Barnes & Noble right now.
Uh-huh.
The Dremel company has put out some phenomenal little 3D printers. But a makerspace allows people to come and just explore and do different things. And some of the makerspaces, again, are based on the community that they're in. When I was out in Boston is kind of the space for makerspaces.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've got some pretty phenomenal ones. There's a Artisan Alley that's actually two blocks long, and you could go in there, and there's people welding bikes, and, you know, there's people doing beading, glass beading, and, you know, like at Sector 67 up in Madison, they have embroidery sewing machines, and they have people in there making quilts. They have aluminum casting where they have kids working with people from the, you know, PhDs or of tradesmen.
From the university?
From the university, or they might be somebody that just likes to do things with wood, and they'll be working alongside of them. But it's basically a support place where you could go, and the equipment's there for you to create and explore things that you're interested in. Again, Sector 67 actually offers programs on weekends for middle school students where they come in and they do Arduino programming and Raspberry Pi programming, which is programming these little kids, and a lot of stuff with Minecraft, which is a big deal with kids these days. But it gives kids and the community chance to work alongside each other and do things. So we've written a couple grants at Racine Unified to get some of our maker spaces in. But in the meantime, we are expanding a lot of the maker spaces that we currently are, a lot of the equipment we have in the schools right now to allow more of that learning.
Could you give us a couple, three examples, maybe a couple examples of these makerspaces or beginning makerspaces in the schools?
When I was up, I had actually installed one up at Franklin when I was there. I had somebody from the business class who's taken an entrepreneur class who wanted to create something that he wanted to sell as part of his entrepreneur experience.
Uh-huh.
And he came in and said, you know, I hear you had a 3D printer. So he worked with one of the engineering students who taught him how to do the 3D modeling, and he started making these little prototypes. And pretty soon then he went back to his class and he would tweak them. So here's someone from marketing and taking a marketing class, working with someone in engineering, and they would make these devices. Some of the kids, they do things with the Android programming. So they'll come in and they'll work on a computer and do MIT App Inventor. Next thing you know, they're doing apps. They've created an app on an Android device or on their phone where you could go through and play, you know, stuff like, you know, hit the gopher.
You know,
some of the little games that they like to do. But you could do almost anything you want. A lot of 3D printing, laser engraving. I've had kids do etching on glasses, but those are kind of the classroom things. But, you know, creating trebuchets is a big one. Engraving on leather, pouring, casting. It's whatever the students want to do.
But the whole idea then is to promote kids' creativity then,
right.
Give them an outlet for this creativity, and which is, enhances their self-concept,
right.
And so forth, and maybe even heads toward a career or something like that.
Right. It's really interesting is if you look at a lot of the places they're finding success, they're finding a lot of success actually in the English learning community where you have English language learners.
Oh, yes.
And because, you know, often if there's a communication issue, you could communicate with pictures and you can communicate with ideas, but it gives people a chance to really explore things. So we're looking at some of that stuff in you know, some of the elementary schools as well.
Yeah.
But it's basically just a creative space. The one that I'm really interested in is not just the ones in the schools where the kids can start, you know, jump shooting their own learning. But when you get communities involved, I think that it allows people in the community to come in and see all the potential our kids have, but it also allows the kids to see what other careers might be out there and where they might want to explore. And some of the relationships you see that transpire over the years, they're pretty phenomenal. You know, they are actually using it at an at-risk school in Monona Grove. They put in a makerspace.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, one of the students there stayed all night and built his own 3D printer. So it's a pretty phenomenal thing. If you are really interested, and they have a maker fair up at State Fair Park in the fall, they're phenomenal. You go in and kids are playing. You could take a Makey Makey, which is a little programming thing, and
yes.
You can connect marshmallows to the inside of a piano and play the marshmallows, and it's playing the piano. People spin wool up there, but a lot of the activities is just making, like, light up LED panels where the kids can make name badges or anything. Yeah. It's just a chance to really explore different concepts, but you could learn about electricity, you could learn about all these things. So you're learning you're learning while you're playing, basically.
So the idea then of developing these makerspaces then is to provide outlets for kids then to use the thoughts and the ideas that they have in different and kinds of creative sorts of ways that lead to
higher learning
and ultimately careers or whatever. I'm keep thinking of it now. What kind of an employee would you want working in a makerspace? And I don't think I'm that kind of a person. I think it would be a geek kind of a person.
Well,
would be wonderful.
It's that's the nice thing about a makerspace is you don't have to be anything. You could be just come in to literally play, and you find your love there. You know, you could do welding, you could do CNC machining, you could do woodworking, you could do glass beading, you could do wood. Well, you know, the makerspaces, again, are based on what the community wants are. So it's basically just having fun.
So our time is almost up, Terry. Then is there anything else that we should talk about? Now, there was a STEM fair go ahead with anything that you have.
One of the things we had talked about was some of the new programs we did start this year.
Yes.
And what we're doing is there's a lot of good things going on at all of our schools, but one of the things, but they're being driven by the students and the teachers there, the leadership there. But the teachers are really taking those off. But one of the really neat things that I saw was actually with our biomedical pathway that we put in this year. It's a Project Lead the Way program, and we started out at Case, Park, and Horlick with this biomedical sciences.
Uh-huh.
It's a 1-year project-based learning class. The kids actually explore 33 different careers, but they're doing things like discovering how do you analyze a blood droplet in a forensic scene, and what happens when you do a bypass, and you know, how does a heart work, and what's all this stuff with heart murmurs. So it's all exploration. But that was implemented. The computer science programs were implemented this year, and they've all taken off. But we started with 44 kids at Case. Next year, we have over 300 signed up for first year and over 100 for the second year. We started with one section at Park, and next year, we're going to offer close to 5. Same thing at Horlick. The kids are telling us what they want to do and where they want to learn, and the nice thing is these are in careers that Racine Unified or the Racine community needs.
And this is the job that you have, is the taking that information and trying to facilitate opportunities for these kids to have these experiences.
Yeah, I just stay out of the way. You know, you go in the classrooms, and you know the teachers are the champions, and they're the ones that are doing the exposure. But it's a curriculum that's a national model. The kids could get 3 college credits when they take an end of course exam in these areas. So after the first year or so, when they're a freshman, they could come away with 3 college credits and exploring 33 credits, all in a project-based learning, and they've learned how to do different things. And basically, you just stay out of their way because they're driving their own learning, and they're enjoying the heck out of it.
Well, on that note, we must close up shop here for today. To our radio audience, we say thank you for being with us today as we visited with Ms. Terry Tessman, Supervisor of Personalized Learning and STEAM for the Racine Unified School District. Thank you so much, Terry, for joining me for this important discussion of current and planned career-oriented activities in Racine Unified in the academies of Racine. This is really an exciting venture, and I wish you well on behalf of our kids and our community. Finally, tune in next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. for another edition of Education Matters.